It's Central Time. I'm Rob Ferret. You're with us here on the Ideas Network. Coming up, over the holidays, President Biden said the federal government can't solve COVID-19 by itself and that individual states need to take the lead. We'll look at what the federal, state, and local governments are doing and can do to help bring an end to the pandemic. First, the pandemic has created big challenges for parents over the last couple of years. We've talked on the show about the ways moms have seen an increase in their parenting workload, especially when school-age kids learned from home. New research here in Wisconsin finds big changes for dads, too. During the pandemic, dads reported taking on more child care than before, and because of widespread work-from-home policies, new dads got to spend more time at home with infants, whereas in normal times, fathers are often left out of the family leave equation. We're talking now about fatherhood during the pandemic, and we want to hear from you at 800-642-1234. If you're a dad, how has the pandemic changed your role, if at all, as a parent? Did you spend more time with kids for one reason or another? What have you learned along the way? What have your biggest challenges been during the pandemic? Does it change the way you think about your work-life balance into the future? Call 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234 or email ideas@WPR.org. Daryl Davidson is the director of the Milwaukee Fatherhood Initiative. He's also the city's community engagement director. Daryl, thanks a lot for joining us today.
Thank you for inviting me.
Well, Daryl, the Fatherhood Initiative there in Milwaukee was around way before the pandemic. Can you talk just a little bit about the kind of work you do there?
Yes, the Fatherhood Initiative started in 2006 after much research on the benefits of parenting and how father engagement is essential to the well-being of a child and a child's development. And so the type of work that we do includes organizing collaborative efforts, including the Housing Authority, the Milwaukee Child Support Offices, Child Development Opportunities, different employment groups, different organizations that work with private sector as well as public sector to assist men and prioritize their health as well as their social well-being. And we gather together to make sure that we're able to find ways of assisting men no matter what those assistances are. So we're a comprehensive group.
So here we have the pandemic. Things changed in many households, of course, through focus groups, through the kinds of calls you and your partner agencies are getting. What kind of things have you been hearing from dads?
We know that fathers are finding ways of being creative now that they're at home more. Many of the fathers discovered that they didn't have enough of a work and balanced home life. So they found ways of making sure to get their children involved in home activities that were going to be essential and memorable, as well as making sure that they could do some things that would instill lifelong memories with those children. That included not only spending time together, but also assisting them with everyday routines and helping them with their schoolwork, since many of the school activities became virtual after the pandemic.
Now, there are a lot, of course, of negatives regarding the pandemic, but it seems like there have been some silver linings. Many of the dads you and others in Milwaukee heard from, even if they were at home for bad reasons, they're out of a job, short-term or long-term, they found, it sounds like many of them, that they enjoyed having more time to spend with their kids.
They did. I know that, especially today when fathers were finding ways of turning their identity into their work identity, the pandemic hit, all of a sudden their identity began to shift. They had a much more active role in helping around the house. Everybody wasn't clear about which parent was going to be working and which parent was not going to be working as much. And what you discovered was the fathers developed an emotional absence when they were away from home that they didn't know that they had. And therefore, coming back home and getting to see not only the personalities of their children on a regular basis, but also seeing how their nurturing enhanced that relationship, they couldn't do without it. And now what we're seeing is some of the fathers who are going back into the workplace away from home are openly stating that they want to make commitments to find a balance between their home life and will not accept certain jobs that don't allow that.
What would you say to employers, yeah, who may be hearing this from dads who for the first time are saying, you know what, I need to leave some time for parenting?
the first thing that I let employers know is that the father's contribution is essential to the growth of a well-balanced child. And what we're also finding is that since the fathers want to prioritize this, that it does make sense to find a way to negotiate either time on the job or, if there's possible, have the father work more from home in the capacity that's going to assist the workplace. And also include that in advertising about the job. If there's marketing that says that we are a family-friendly workplace or we support the work that fathers do at home, we want those job opportunities to let them know that they are family-friendly.
Talking to Daryl Davidson, director of the Milwaukee Fatherhood Initiative, also the city's community engagement director. We're talking about how fatherhood changed during the pandemic for many people. And you could join in maybe with your story as a dad or the dad in your family. Have you been able to spend more time at home? If you had to spend more time at home for good reasons or bad, what has it been like, if so, to spend more time with your kids? Does it make you want to change your work setup when things go back to normal in the future? Call 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234 or email ideas@wpr.org. Daryl, you got a lot of calls from dads and moms, for that matter, asking for resources to help dads who are maybe in this position of spending more time with kids than they were used to. What were some of the biggest challenges that people were asking about?
The biggest challenges were the resources that were virtual, because many of the institutions and services that were available to us primarily were in person. And if they were often government institutions, they had closed their doors during the pandemic. We are seeing opportunities now, and if they contact organizations such as the National Fatherhood Initiative, or even take a look at us at the Milwaukee Fatherhood Initiative, our number is 414-335-5859. We can assist with identifying virtual resources that are available to families. And keep in mind, even though we're the Fatherhood Initiative, we did receive more calls from mothers during this period because they were trying to identify efforts that existed to get the fathers more comfortable with their role at home, as well as mental health support for that changing family environment.
Are there opportunities pre-pandemic and now with the pandemic for dads to get together and talk about the things that they're doing that they like, the challenges they're facing, and kind of help each other learn at the same time?
Yes. Yeah, so in Milwaukee, Wisconsin, we do have a Real Men, Real Talk group that is together every second Monday of the month. We also have relationships with other organizations, parent organizations, and father-friendly organizations that have regular contact with each other. If you are a part of a fatherhood program, often they'll have services available where those groups get together. And there also exists a group where fathers who are older are able to mentor the younger fathers or the fathers-to-be in their parenting skills, as well as what to know when they become a father.
Let's bring on a caller now at 800-642-1234. Mila is with us in Milwaukee. Mila, hi.
Hi. I just curious about the resources for parents, head of households who are dealing with mental health issues and their children's mental health issues. How do they deal with that? What kinds of resources are available? And do they use something called parent peer specialists? Thank you.
Mila, thanks a lot. Resources for parents and families dealing with mental health concerns, especially during the pandemic, Daryl.
So what we have are available services that are connected through the Milwaukee County Behavioral Health, and you can reach them by going online. But also, if your children are school-age children, you can talk to your school's counselor, as well as the resources. Often they will have parent advocates at the school. We do have other resources for people who are about to become parents related to mental health. There is an African American Breastfeeding Association, for example, that exists in Milwaukee, Wisconsin. So if there's prenatal concerns, this is for mothers and fathers That service is available. They can be reached through their website as well as they have a Facebook page.
Mila, thanks for that question. We're talking to Daryl Davidson, City of Milwaukee's Community Engagement Director and Director of the Milwaukee Fatherhood Initiative. We're talking about fatherhood during the pandemic, what has changed for better, for worse, the challenges, maybe the silver linings, and you can join in at 800-642-1234. If you're a dad, what changed for you during the pandemic? If you're a new dad, if you became a parent during the pandemic, how much stress, how much challenge did that add for you? Wherever you are listening, are there resources? Are there people to talk to help you deal with these changing times? Call it at 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234. You can also email ideas@WPR.org. We'll continue the conversation coming up on Central Time. This is Central Time. I'm Rob Verrett. We're picking up our conversation about fatherhood during the pandemic. Daryl Davidson is with us, director of the Milwaukee Fatherhood Initiative, and you can join in at 800-642-1234. If you're a dad, did you find yourself spending more time at home with kids by choice or by necessity? What was that like? Were there benefits to that? What were some of the challenges you faced along the way? Call in now at 800-642-1234 with a story from your family. That's 800-642-1234. You can also email us, ideas@WPR.org. Daryl, this is a disease that hit Milwaukee hard. It hit Black Americans hard, in particular, higher death rates for them. Were there challenges just in sheer dealing with grief and loss for the communities you work with?
Absolutely. I mean, the pandemic has changed the future, and it's basically changed it forever. Millions of people across the country have left the workforce, and so many thousands dropped out, even as the school years began and the students were virtual. So there was a lot of concern about where is this income going to come from, and we also had the debate between which parent is going to go back to work more versus the other. There were relationships that existed before the pandemic where the parents may not have gotten along as well, and they needed more support in order to coordinate and prioritize the schedules of the children. So it did make sense in many cases that the parents, after prioritizing the children, they made the decision, I'm going to have to quit work. And that was not just the fathers, but also the mothers.
And what kind of opportunities or what kind of resources are there for people in that negotiation? It's an extra challenge, an extra bit of stress for a couple as they work through those kind of conversations.
That's true. In Milwaukee, there's a parenting network that has support for moms and dads in situations like that. And also through the Milwaukee Fatherhood Initiative, we will do casework related to the father's situation, what's going on at home, and if they can identify that one of their goals is to attain a job through us, we can assist by working with many of our partner agencies. But also it does make sense to lean on the support systems that come from the mental health serving agencies. There's numerous ones in our state of Wisconsin, and the fact is, mental health is not discussed as much as it really should be. And there's an opportunity now to not only take a look at what the services are and have a better understanding, but also be clear that those mental health providers are extremely diverse. There is someone that understands each situation that exists out there, so they should not be ignored during this time.
Go back to our callers now at 800-642-1234. Lauren is with us in Rhinelander. Lauren, hi.
Hi. I'm a parent educator up here in Rhinelander, and I was just going to point out that during the pandemic, we've had more fathers showing up to some of our group conversations and meetings that we have, which has been really, really nice, so that the fathers can learn from each other, but also see how, you know, the mothers interact with their kids. And family resource centers just in general are a great resource for families. So if you're somewhere in the state and you don't know where to turn to look for parenting classes, et cetera, if you just look for a local family resource center, they should be able to point you in the right direction.
And Lauren, did you find yourselves doing these kind of peer meetings online through a lot of this? And if so, is that something you might keep in the future, even when you don't have to make it more accessible?
Yes. So we're kind of now in between virtual and in-person. So some of our program is going back to in-person and some of the parenting classes remain virtual. And we have definitely had a good turnout from parents virtually because childcare is obviously an issue if you're having to leave home to do something like a parenting class. So we're kind of figuring that out at the minute. And I think we are going to be able to keep options open where we either provide childcare or we stick to virtual so that people can still show up.
Interesting, Lauren. Thanks so much for sharing that at 800-642-1234. Daryl, have you found that to be maybe an opportunity offering those virtual meetings, as Lauren said, and making it easier for people if they can't find childcare?
Absolutely. And one thing that I'll have to share, we've had virtual meetings and virtual services provided. We had a large Milwaukee Fatherhood Summit where one of the days was done virtually and the fathers were in the cars with their children, on the couches in the living room with their children. So childcare was not an issue. The services were made available to them. And I respect where Lauren went with that because I know that there are many family-serving organizations that want to help fathers, but what's happening is they were not necessarily identifying that the fathers had a place in the organization. So the recommendation that I give is up front, start saying, we have a space for fathers here, or we prioritize fathers also. And that makes the fathers not only feel welcome, but that also provides an avenue for the fathers to initiate the calls. It doesn't always have to be the moms that initiate the calls for these services.
Thanks for that call, Lauren, at 800-642-1234. Talking to Daryl Davidson with the Milwaukee Fatherhood Initiative, looking at the changing face of fatherhood during the pandemic. If you're a dad, you could initiate a call. Dads are shy out there today at 800-642-1234. If you want to let us know how fatherhood changed for you, if at all, 800-642-1234 is the number to call. Daryl, you participated in this presentation with a UW researcher, some folks working on these issues in Michigan. One thing you mentioned that struck me, dads reported, okay, we're seeing a lot of information about domestic violence prevention, which is important. We're not seeing as much information about positive parenting behaviors, about how to be good dads. Do you see that as, I don't know, an opportunity that to meet that need?
It is an opportunity. Part of the reason is because historically, if the fathers were considered to be the secondary parent, then it wasn't always discussed or even researched for this matter how essential the father was to the child's life. But what is a point of the Milwaukee Fatherhood Initiative is to focus on the quality of the father-child relationship, because that matters much more than the actual specific hours that they may have together. What are the children learning? Is the father representing himself in the best way possible? Is he showing a positive relationship between he and the child's mother? Those types of things go a long way with making a healthy, stable, emotionally stable child in the end. And the other thing that we're looking at is, what is the father's capacity not only for caregiving, but also the types of contribution that seem to be intangible, confidence. If the father is a confident person, if the father is looking after their health, then those are the types of things that are being passed on to the child.
You recently co-wrote an op-ed piece looking at family leave and saying, hey, there are some lessons here we're learning. If we're going to expand paid family leave, don't make it just about the moms. Can you talk more about that?
I can, because what we have noticed has been that the fathers are focused much more on the job after they've had enough experience with their child, and they know that their child is not only healthy, but their child is safe. And now they are not thinking about, well, where's my child going to get this type of nurturing, or is this a situation where we're going to be concerned about the family income? We want the family to be as stable and as emotionally attached as possible. And that emotional attachment is extremely important in the first few years of a child's life. You can't get those years back. So we're encouraging employers as well as fathers to make that a priority. They should know that the family focus at the beginning is going to ultimately make a healthy society in the end.
That takes us to where I wanted to start to wrap up on, Daryl, which is lessons learned here, things we could take from this mostly negative experience of the pandemic to talk about how things like the Fatherhood Initiative do their job in Milwaukee. What kind of things are you wanting to take out of this for the future?
Well, I want to make sure that the fathers have conversations and discussions that are more solutions focused. I mean, we were able to experience the pandemic and we saw so many challenges and hardships and hurdles. But the fact is, it was a great opportunity to show the children that the unknown can be navigated through. So if the parents and the fathers are the ones who are saying, it's okay, we're going to find a way out of this situation, those are conversations that need to be had, especially if those fathers and those mothers are doing the problem solving together. Also, what we have to put out there is there are numerous services, behavioral health, energy assistance, supportive housing, workforce development. There's child support services. There's offender reentry services, child development screenings. Those are available if you talk to the services that are available that are in the community. And many people don't know about them, so we ask that you go to your resources and your different service providers. There's hospitals have this information. So do social service agencies. So do your family serving agencies. We want you to go to them and talk.
In just our last half a minute or so, Daryl, can you offer a little Daryl is off the line. Thanks to Daryl Davidson. We'll leave it there then. Director of the Milwaukee Fatherhood Initiative. He's also the City of Milwaukee's Community Engagement Director. He joins us today to talk about the Milwaukee Fatherhood Initiative and the ways that fatherhood has changed over the course of the pandemic. Still time for you to share your story. You can email ideas@WPR.org. That's ideas@WPR.org. And of course, you can always tweet us at Central Time WPR. Let us know how, if at all, fatherhood changed for you over the last couple of years. Texas is asking the federal government to help them battle COVID-19. Specifically, the state wants federal resources to support testing centers, medical personnel, and more monoclonal antibody treatments. At the end of December, Texas was reporting more than 10,000 new COVID cases per day, up from 4,000 in November. That state's request comes after President Biden told some of the nation's governors that they're going to have to take the lead on fighting the virus.
Look, there is no federal solution. This gets solved at a state level. I'm looking at Governor Sununu on the board here. He talks about that a lot. And it ultimately gets down to where the rubber meets the road, and that's where the patient is in need of help or preventing the need for help.
Biden also reiterated some of the recent promises he made, including the federal government's purchase of 500 million rapid COVID tests. So we thought we'd take a look at the various ways the federal, state, and local governments can help the pandemic, what they can't do, and the role of the private sector and the rest of us. You could join in at 800-642-1234. What do you think of Biden saying that states need to take the lead? The federal government can only provide support. What do you want to see Wisconsin do? What do you want to see the federal government do when it comes to providing testing, support for medical personnel, the treatments that are out there, promoting vaccines, requiring vaccines? Call 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234 or email ideas@WPR.org. Julie Rovner is the chief Washington correspondent for Kaiser Health News and the host of KHN's What the Health podcast. Julie, welcome back to the show.
Thanks for having me.
Well, let's talk about some of the division of labor here. First of all, President Biden says the federal government can't do it all. It's done a lot. What do you see as the main role of the federal government in trying to help states deal with this?
Well, the main role of the federal government and its public health service is and has been to provide funding and support and expertise and guidance to state and local public health agencies, which, as the president pointed out in the clip that you played, is kind of where the rubber meets the road when it comes to public health.
There have been big questions about the government and how the federal government and how much its role is to provide stuff, whether that was PPE early on or then masks, vaccines, and now testing. How important is it for the federal government to distribute things or coordinate states as they seek out that vital material?
Well, there we've had, you know, going back to the beginning of the pandemic, this national stockpile that was generally created for the idea that if there was going to be an emergency, it was going to be on a state or regional basis, and that the federal government would maintain this stockpile of medical supplies and drugs, and would be they would be available to be shipped as needed to places that were experiencing a temporary surge and need for those things. There are also people who can help, and obviously we've had the National Guard mobilized in many places. And there are also members of the federal public health service, uniformed public health service, who are available to come and help out. Of course, what we're seeing with the pandemic is that, particularly right now, everybody is having a surge at the same time. So it's difficult for the federal government to surge to, you know, one place. The model is more an outbreak in a particular state or a particular city or a hurricane or wildfires or something that does not affect the entire country at the same time.
The Biden administration has been criticized some for not having testing ready for a surge like this. So how big a problem do you see the availability of rapid testing in particular being right now, Julie?
Well, other countries have been distributing tests basically for free, or they're available, you know, for pickup at libraries or for a dollar or at the grocery store. We have gone through the private sector, and this is partly because not so much the U.S. doesn't have a public health system. We do. It's because we don't have a public health, a public medical system. We don't have public health insurance the way many other countries do. So it's easier for them to sort of integrate their public health system with their sort of what we would consider our private health system. And we had private companies making these tests. And I think there was assumption, obviously wrong, last summer when things started to get better, that, well, why are we making all these tests when we're certainly not going to need them because there aren't that many people that have COVID anymore. That turned out to be an incorrect assumption. Now it takes a while for manufacturers of these tests to ramp back up.
Talking to Julie Rovner, chief Washington correspondent for Kaiser Health News, host there of the What the Health podcast, talking about the division of labor between federal, state, maybe local governments when it comes to all the things involved in trying to deal with this newest COVID surge. You can join in with your questions or your thoughts at 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234, or email ideas@WPR.org. Julie, states, we've got 50 of them plus some territories, Washington, D.C., in many ways going their own ways. What are you seeing when it comes to the range of state responses right now to this surge?
Yeah, they are. And, you know, it's difficult because we're having a hard time right now differentiating between sort of who has Omicron and who's vaccinated and who might be at less risk for severe disease and who still has Delta, which is still floating around and might need monoclonal antibodies. But it takes a long time to figure that out. And you need to get those drugs on board fairly quickly. Obviously, different states are in different stages of this surge. So it makes sense that states would do things on a state level or even on a local level. But right now, you know, if you look at the maps that various public health agencies are putting out, every state is having a surge. And I think I just saw a map today that said every single county is having a surge.
Let's talk about those monoclonal antibodies. These are treatments. They're pretty effective. I was looking at recommendations, though. You use a different one depending on which stage you are in the illness. Most of them require infusions where you got to get in and have them put them in you. You don't just get a quick shot. Texas saying it's out of one called Sotrovimab. Republican Governor Greg Abbott of Texas says the Biden administration is effectively hoarding these drugs, denying states independent access to these treatments. Do you see log jams in the world of monoclonal antibodies right now? Where are they coming from?
There are, and yet another problem is that it turns out there's three different monoclonal antibodies that are available. We've got this pill that's going to come online, but that's not available yet. It's still being, you know, it was just approved and it needs to be manufactured. So of the three that we had available, two of them don't work on the Omicron variant. So you not only need to test positive, you need to know which variant you have. And that's part of the reason why the federal government has been controlling the distribution of these monoclonal antibodies. But obviously, there is more demand right now than there is supply.
Now, there are also these antiviral treatments out there. Good news, but making things more complicated too. Are these getting to where they need to go?
Well, that's the pill that I was just talking about. And they're right. And they're they are not yet because it's still too soon.
How about states when it comes to things like requiring vaccines or requiring vaccines or testing to do certain things or be in particular workplaces? There's a federal effort on that we'll talk to in a minute. What's the range of responses now at the state level?
Well, the range of responses is wide, and at the local level. There are states where some counties have mask mandates and some don't, and some businesses have vaccine mandates, and in some states businesses aren't allowed to have vaccine mandates. There's obviously a fight going on at the federal level. The Supreme Court this Friday will hear two cases about the federal vaccine mandates, so we should know in the fairly near future about those. But in the meantime, there's a lot of people who are still not vaccinated, and still walking around potentially vulnerable and potentially still spreading this illness.
Let's bring on a caller now at 800-642-1234. Arthur is with us in Madison. Arthur, hi.
Hello.
What did you want to ask about, Arthur?
Well, my question was, why haven't we, the government, kind of pushed the insurance companies to force vaccinations or have the insurance companies to force vaccinations instead of just having them not really saying anything or not really doing anything right now? Why haven't they, say either get vaccinated or you're not insured?
Arthur, thanks for the call. Julie, insurance companies, either a carrot or a stick, I guess. What's their role been? Could they do something like that?
I don't think insurance companies really want to be put in that position. I mean, there are obviously insurance companies that are health maintenance organizations like Kaiser Permanente, with which, by the way, Kaiser Health News is not affiliated, but they have sort of an interest in keeping you healthy. And they do, they strongly urge things. They make it as easy as possible. Generally, the mandate requirements tend to come from government, not from private entities. Although, as we see, some private businesses are requiring it too, but they're just saying, if you don't want to, you can only come into our business if you get vaccinated, not like the insurance company that says, if you don't get vaccinated, we're not going to cover you.
Arthur, thanks for that call at 800-642-1234. We'll go now to Brett in Elroy. Brett, hi.
Hey, I just wondered if you could touch on if we're seeing Omicron versus Delta in the hospitalizations right now. Early reports were stating that Omicron was more of upper respiratory, whereas Delta probably attacked deeper lung tissue. And if that makes a difference with the availability of monoclonal antibodies and why we're not seeing the antibodies distributed like we should.
Brett, thanks for the call. A lot of big questions, Julie, about Omicron versus Delta. What do we know so far about what Brett was asking about?
Well, there's so much that we don't know, mm-hmm. but one of the big things, first of all, we don't even know the case numbers that we have right now. We don't know how accurate those are, because now many people who can get these at-home tests are taking them. And if you test positive on an at-home test, unless you're going to call your doctor, there's no requirement that be reported. So there's probably many more positive tests and probably mild cases than we're seeing in those numbers. It is very hard to do the genetic work that it takes to differentiate one strain from another. Hospitals pretty much around the country are slammed right now. So it's hard to know whether you have Delta or Omicron, although I did today see that the CDC said that in the cases that they have been sequencing, Omicron is now 95% of the new cases.
Thanks a lot for that call. We're talking about the various ways federal and state governments are fighting COVID-19. Julie Rovner is with us, chief Washington correspondent at Kaiser Health News, host there of the What the Health podcast. You can join in at 800-642-1234. What's your reaction to President Biden saying, hey, it's mostly up to states to end the pandemic, though we, the federal government, are going to support your efforts? What kind of policies are you seeing at your local and county levels? Do you have a mask mandate in your community of any sort? Do you wish you did? Do you wish you didn't? What role should local governments, state governments, be playing here? You can join in at 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234, or email ideas@WPR.org. We'll continue the conversation coming up on Central Time. This is Central Time. I'm Rob Verrett. We're talking about what federal, state, and local governments are able to do to manage COVID-19. President Biden recently said there's not one federal solution to ending the pandemic. A lot of the work has to happen at the state level. He said the feds would still play a supporting role. Julie Rovner stays with us. She's the chief Washington correspondent for Kaiser Health News. And you could join in with your thoughts or questions at 800-642-1234. What do you want to see from the feds, from the state government, from your local or county government? Call 800-642-1234 or email ideas@WPR.org. Let's go back to your calls now. Judy is with us in Madison. Judy, hi.
Hi.
What did you want to ask about or tell us about, Judy?
Well, I'd just like to ask how she feels about creating these temporary tent facilities like they did when the pandemic initially broke out, and hospitals were inundated with patients, so they created these alternative facilities. What does she feel about creating those for people who choose not to be vaccinated and are basically taking up all the space in the hospitals? And so people that have legitimate health concerns, that need heart surgery, need any other kind of medical treatment that requires hospitalization, would have a bed and they could be treated rather than sitting off and waiting until a bed opens up.
Judy, thanks for the call. Julie, the idea of field hospitals for COVID to relieve some of the pressure on hospitals, Judy suggesting mainly for the unvaccinated. What do you think?
Well, I don't know that they would be able to differentiate
right.
If somebody's brought in. And also, I mean, part of the problem with that is that if you have generally field hospitals are people who need less type of supportive care, it's pretty hard to have a lot of ventilators in field hospitals, although they did in New York. I mean, they set up a field hospital that they ended up not having to use where they did have ventilators. So it is possible. You know, one would hope it's not going to get to that. But certainly if you set up a field hospital, I don't think you would do it to try to segregate people by whether or not they were vaccinated, but by, you know, where their needs could be best served.
Thanks for that call, Judy. And that raises the issue, Julie, of the federal government helping with personnel, which is one of the big issues in overwhelmed hospitals. We've seen some federal relief coming to places like Green Bay, among others. How much more capacity, though, does the federal government have when it comes to sending medical personnel to help out in overburdened states?
Well, it's trying to. I mean, you know, obviously the National, as I said, the National Guard has been mobilized in many states to help with, you know, it's not just the doctors and the nurses and the medical professionals, but it's also the other people who keep the hospital running who may not be, you know, professionally, you know, medically trained, the people who do the food service and do the cleaning. And, you know, that everybody is exhausted. Everybody is catching COVID. And there is going to be need for help to basically prevent the nation's, you know, healthcare system, our healthcare delivery system, from crumbling under the strain. That's what the big concern has been.
Thanks for that call. We're talking to Julie Rovner with Kaiser Health News, looking at the latest COVID-19 news and the division of labor. What can the federal government do? What can the state and local governments do? You could join in with your thoughts or your questions at 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234 or email ideas@WPR.org. Back to your calls now. Jake is on the line in Madison. Jake, hello.
Hi, I just have a humble opinion maybe, but I just wanted to state for people out there that when people are refusing to wear masks or refusing to get vaccinated and they talk about their individual freedoms, that's not what it's about. They're making it about their selfishness and their lack of consideration for the community at large.
Jake, thanks for the call. Julie, before we get into some mask mandates, a related issue, what do you think of Jake's idea, selfishness versus public service? There's been concern that, yeah, we haven't really thought about each other in some ways in our response as individuals to the pandemic.
Well, this has been the debate all along. When does our responsibility to our fellow citizens, you know, override our desire and need for personal freedom? And, you know, I've seen this compared to so many things, although one of the more effective comparisons I saw today was, you know, if a bunch of people are together on a boat and somebody pokes a hole in the bottom of his stateroom floor, and other people might complain, but they're all literally in the same boat. And if the boat sinks, they're all going down. This is a debate. It's hardly new. It's, you know, we've seen a lot of it in this pandemic, but it's hardly new when people's individual rights sort of butt up against the needs of a community at large.
And then with mask mandates, Julie, the statewide mandate's been long gone here in Wisconsin after a court ruling. County mask mandates few and far between here. What is the state of the art when it comes to mandating masks around the country?
Well, and complicating this even more, and it, in most states, it's the same. There are few state mask mandates left because they've been so unpopular. I live in a county where there is a mask mandate, but now what the experts are saying, particularly with Omicron, is because it is so much more contagious that you need a better mask, that actually people should be wearing better than cloth masks or even better than surgical masks. And that's something that it's been very difficult to get through to people. You know, they've had these masks and they've been wearing them and they've been fine up until now because we haven't been dealing with a variant that is this contagious. So it's not just a matter of whether or not to wear a mask, but what kind of mask to wear.
We heard from Matt in Wausau who emails, our dealing with COVID has been the worst in the world. We've been in this 2 years and still don't have enough masks, tests, vaccines, hospital beds, nurses, doctors. Matt says for-profit healthcare is literally killing us. I don't know, Julie, what do you think about that comparison on the world stage of the U.S. performance on COVID?
I've been watching other countries, what they've been doing too, and nobody really seems to have the magic answer to how to do this right. I mean, our public health system is pretty much as public as most other countries' public health systems. Where we differ is that our delivery system is private, and many other countries don't have private delivery systems, although some other countries do. Canada does. It's just everybody's exhausted around the world and there's been pushback everywhere. I'm not suggesting for a minute that we've done a great job, but when I look around, we obviously have plenty of company among countries that haven't done a great job either.
Time for one more caller. Michael is with us in Northwest Wisconsin. Michael, hi.
Hi, I am a student at UW-Madison and obviously Dane County has a mask mandate. And I'm just wondering, with the campus having about 96% student vaccination, I'm just wondering to what extent or what degree masks are important and should be required on campus, you know?
Michael, thanks for the call. I work in a UW-Madison-owned building, and there's a sign, mask required regardless of vaccination status. Julie, in a high vaccine environment, do mask mandates still make sense, Michael wonders?
In an Omicron environment, they do, because we're seeing lots and lots of people who are fully vaccinated and boosted getting COVID. They're not getting severe cases, but they're getting it. And if you get it, you can spread it. So again, this is you would like to protect yourself if you can. And being vaccinated, you're not necessarily fully protected. And you would like to protect others who might not be vaccinated and might be more vulnerable.
Thanks for the call, Michael. Julie, we've covered a lot of ground, heard from a lot of great questions from listeners. What do you have your eye on now with so much going on?
I think, you know, there's every expectation that this is going to spike up really fast and then perhaps go down really fast. I am most worried about the ability of the healthcare system just to keep running. I'm really worried about these people who've been, you know, working nonstop for 2 years and who are exhausted and just drained and whether they're going to be able to handle this, and about people who have other health problems. I think one of the callers mentioned this, that, you know, if you have a heart attack or, you know, we had a snowstorm here in Washington, D.C. this week where we're not really used to it. And, you know, you can fall and slip on the ice and break something and need to go to the hospital that's all full of COVID patients. So that's kind of my biggest concern right now.
Just very briefly, Julie, do you worry about long-term impact on personnel, the doctors, the nurses, and others? Maybe this is going to drive some of them out of the profession?
I do. I mean, I worry about sort of the state of our medical care system going forward. There's a lot of people, young people stepping up who want to get into it, which is a good thing. But I just, you know, while those people are getting trained, I worry about people who are sort of nearing retirement saying, I'm not going to do this anymore. And us having, you know, a really severe shortage of healthcare personnel.
Julie, as always, thanks a lot for joining us today.
My pleasure.
That's Julie Rovner, chief Washington correspondent for Kaiser Health News, host of KHN's What the Health podcast. We talked to her about President Biden saying COVID needs to be solved mostly at the state level and what federal, state, and local governments are doing to help.